he enjoys, is supremely great, is lasting, is his own. Assume that a man has good intentions and has made progress, but is still far from the heights. The result is a series of ups and downs. He is now raised to heaven, now brought down to earth. For those who lack experience and training, there is no limit to the downhill course. Such a one falls into the chaos of Epicurus, empty and boundless. There is still a third class of men, those who toy with wisdom. They have not indeed touched it, but yet are in sight of it, and have it, so to speak, within striking distance. They are not dashed about, nor do they drift back either. They are not on dry land, but are already in port. Therefore, considering the great difference between those on the heights and those in the depths, and seeing that even those in the middle are pursued by an ebb and flow peculiar to their state, and pursued also by an enormous risk of returning to their degenerate ways, we should not give ourselves up to matters which occupy our time. They should be shut out. If they once gain an entrance, they will bring in still others to take their places. Let us resist them in their early stages. It is better that they shall never begin than that they shall be made to cease. Farewell. Letter 73. On Philosophers and Kings. It seems to me erroneous to believe that those who have loyally dedicated themselves to philosophy are stubborn and rebellious, scorners of magistrates or kings, or of those who control the administration of public affairs. For, on the contrary, no class of man is so popular with the philosopher as the ruler is, and rightly so, because rulers bestow upon no men a greater privilege than upon those who are allowed to enjoy peace and leisure. Hence, those who are greatly profited, as regards their purpose of right living, by the security of the state, must needs cherish as a father the author of this good. Much more so, at any rate, than those restless persons who are always in the public eye, who owe much to the ruler, but also expect much from him, and are never so generously loaded with favors that their cravings, which grow by being supplied, are thoroughly satisfied. And yet, he whose thoughts are of benefits to come has forgotten the benefits received. And there is no greater evil in covetousness than its ingratitude. Besides, no man in public life thinks of the many whom he has outstripped. He thinks rather of those by whom he is outstripped. And these men find it less pleasing to see many behind them than annoying to see anyone ahead of them. That is the trouble with every sort of ambition. It does not look back. Nor is it ambition alone that is fickle, but also every sort of craving, because it always begins where it ought to end. But that other man, upright and pure, who has left the Senate and the bar and all affairs of state, that he may retire to nobler affairs, cherishes those who have made it possible for him to do this in security. He is the only person who returns spontaneous thanks to them, the only person who owes them a great debt without their knowledge. Just as a man honors and reveres his teachers, by whose aid he has found release from his early wanderings, so the sage honors these men also, under whose guardianship he can put his good theories into practice. But you answer, other men too are protected by a king's personal power. Perfectly true. But, just as, out of a number of persons who have profited by the same stretch of calm weather, a man deems that his debt to Neptune is greater if his cargo during that voyage has been more extensive and valuable, and just as the vow is paid with more of a will by the merchant than by the passenger, and just as, from among the merchants themselves, heartier thanks are uttered by the dealer in spices, purple fabrics, and objects worth their weight in gold than by him who has gathered cheap merchandise that will be nothing but ballast for his ship. Similarly, the benefits of this peace, which extends to all, are more deeply appreciated by those who make good use of it. For there are many of our toga-clad citizens to whom peace brings more trouble than war. Or do those, think you, owe as much as we do for the peace they enjoy, who spend it in drunkenness, or in lust, or in other vices which it were worth even a war to interrupt? No, not unless you think that the wise man is so unfair as to believe that as an individual he owes nothing in return for the advantages which he enjoys with all the rest. I owe a great debt to the sun and to the moon, and yet they do not rise for me alone. I am personally beholden to the seasons and to the God who controls them, although in no respect have they been apportioned for my benefit. The foolish greed of mortals makes a distinction between possession and ownership, and believes that it has ownership in nothing in which the general public has a share. But our philosopher considers nothing more truly his own than that which he shares in partnership with all mankind. For these things would not be common property, as indeed they are, unless every individual had his quota. Even a joint interest based upon the slightest share makes one a partner. Again, the great and true goods are not divided in such a manner that each has but a slight interest. They belong in their entirety to each individual. At a distribution of grain, men receive only the amount that has been promised to each person. The banquet and the meat dole, or all else that a man can carry away with him, are divided into parts. These goods, however, are indivisible, I mean peace and liberty, and they belong in their entirety to all men